friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the October 7th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. This evening, we continue our preview of Saturday night's World Boxing Council heavyweight title fight between the champion Tyson Fury and the challenger Deontay Wilder in Las Vegas, Nevada. This will be the third time the two men have traded punches for the WBC title belt. Their first fight ended in a draw in 2018, and their rematch in 2020 ended with Fury stopping Wilder in 7 rounds. On arrival in Las Vegas, Wilder quickly predicted a knockout victory Saturday night.
I see me beating him up and then knocking him out. As many things that I visualized in the first fight, along with the second, you know, and I didn't execute game plan. But this time around, it's just a different feeling, you know, all the way around, you know, just all the surrounding around me, the atmosphere, you know what I'm saying, just the energy as a whole, you know, and I'm looking forward to putting on a great performance come October the 9th, you know, and those that's going to be in the arena, they're going to feel the electricity that's in there.
For his part, WBC heavyweight champion Tyson Fury says whatever Deontay Wilder throws at him, he'll be ready.
I think you could go to college and get a master's degree in nearly 2 years. So for a boxer to change his style is very easy to do. But no matter what Deontay Wilder does, I'm still going to knock him the beep out.
The Sunny Side of Sports has to be on guard for those furious F-bombs. Meanwhile, Tyson Fury makes it clear that he's engaged in some psychological gamesmanship with Deontay Wilder.
I'm living in Wilder's mind rent-free the whole time, 2 years. Every time he looks in the mirror, he sees Tyson Fury. Every time he goes to bed, before he closes his eyes at night, he sees a Gypsy King. And everything he wakes up and thinks about in the morning, he thinks of Tyson Fury. Even when he goes to sleep at night with his missus, he's thinking of Tyson Fury. You know, it's crazy. It must be crazy to be obsessed with a man like me so much in his life that... Crazy. It's just crazy. But, you know, I've not really made too much of what he says, because this time I'm going to put a knuckle duster on each hand and then I'm going to go into the fight. Can't tell. Can't tell with the Gypsy King. I'm magic. I'm like Houdini.
Like Houdini, have fight fans done a disappearing act ahead of Fury Wilder 3? Or are they excited? To try and answer those questions, let's go to our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moeta.
Sonny, remember, it was 19 months ago they had a second fight in Las Vegas. COVID did a number on all these fight dates, you know. The public have lost interest, to tell you the truth. Not only that, the performance of Anthony Joshua against Usyk did not help at all. If Anthony Joshua had gone in there September 25th in London and knocked out Usyk, I'm talking about knock out Usyk cold in front of 70,000 people, then all the big interest, all eyes would be on Las Vegas Saturday night. So that loss by Anthony Joshua just didn't really help that fight coming up Saturday night. On the other hand, it's a heavyweight title fight. It's a rubber match. Those guys have gone down. They've dropped some bombs. They're knockout artists. People will still pay to see. But will the pay-per-view numbers be like 1 million or 500,000? They will be lucky if they get 300,000 for pay-per-view, because the public is really, really... Since the Anthony Joshua thing is not there happening no more, the interest is not there. But hey man, 17,000 people, if they can pull that into T-Mobile Arena, that'd be all good. But with COVID, you don't know.
Namdi, one thing I do know is that unbeaten heavyweights Efe Ajagba of Nigeria and Frank Sanchez of Cuba will be fighting on the undercard of Fury Wilder 3. Ajagba and Sanchez will go at it in a 10-round non-title bout. How's that one shaping up?
Sonny, Efe Ajagba taking on Frank Sanchez. I want to remind you one thing. Efe Ajagba is 15-0 with 12 knockouts. Frank Sanchez, a lo cubano, Cuban, 18-0 with 13 knockouts. He's a big, big puncher. Both guys are big punchers. And then he's a, what we call a life dog. You know, this fight can go either way. These are young heavyweights, and they've been trained by good trainers. And it's going to be an interesting fight. And I hope homeboy comes up out on top, because if he does, he will be in a position to strike for the heavyweight belts in 2022. I'm talking about Efe Ajagba.
Namdi, let's talk about Manny Pacquiao. The Filipino star recently announced his retirement from the fight game. Your thoughts?
Sonny, Pac-Man, Manny Pacquiao leaves an absolutely marvelous legacy in boxing. He brought a whole lot to the game, Sonny. I mean, we're talking about 26-year pro career, hanging up the glove at the age of 42. It just makes me mad the way he ended up with his last fight against Yordanis Ugas of Cuba. Remember, that fight was after 2-year layoff because of COVID. I did not think it was the right fight to take. Immediately that Errol Spencer pulled off, he should have just gone back to the Philippines. But he lost that fight and he retired. Remember, this is a guy that is an 8-division world champion. I mean, he went from being a light flyweight all the way to junior middleweights, capturing titles all along. Great victories, thanks for the amazing fights and memories of great things you did in the ring. One of the best welterweights. Sad to see him retire. Stay safe, champ, and good luck in the election. Thanks for all the years of great fights. Hope you become the next president of the Philippines. Adios, Pac-Man.
Thanks, Namdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moueta. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis, moderator for Issues in the News. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the latest top stories of the week, including a former Facebook data scientist testified on Capitol Hill that the company is hiding its awareness of apparent harm to some teens and has been dishonest in its fight against hate and misinformation. Listen to Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Thanks, Kim. Kim mentioned Facebook. You can follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. In African football, the Atlas Lions of Morocco roared in Rabat on Wednesday, routing Guinea-Bissau 5-0 in a qualifying match for next year's World Cup in Qatar. With the resounding victory, the Moroccans moved to the top of their World Cup qualifying group with the maximum 6 points from 2 matches. Guinea-Bissau has 4 points from 3 matches. Meanwhile, in Marrakesh, Morocco, Sudan and Guinea played to a 1-1 draw. Guinea now has 2 points in the group, and Sudan has 1 point. The Moroccans look more than ready to advance out of this group. They qualified for the 2018 World Cup in Russia. And if they book a ticket to Qatar, it'll be their 6th World Cup appearance. This is a busy week in Africa's World Cup qualifying competition. There are matches scheduled across the continent over the next few days.
Sporty greetings. This is Sunday Olise, former captain and coach of the Super Eagles of Nigeria. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, listeners. My name is David Temong, the Paralympic silver medal 2016, gold 2017, bronze 2020, Tokyo, Japan. You are listening to Sunny Side of Sport on the Voice of America.
David Among is the subject of a feature profile by Magume Davis Rakawinj, and Magume joins us now for an encore presentation. Sporty warm greetings, Magume!
Sporty warm greetings to Susanne and our listeners. Not even the effects of COVID-19 could stop Ugandan runner David Among from winning bronze for Team Uganda at the Tokyo Japan 2020 Paralympics Games. Among ran his personal best of 3 minutes 53.51 seconds to win bronze in the men's 1500 meters T46 race. Among got impaired while at school in 2005 when his arm was injured in an accident. He says he was inspired by Ugandan long-distance runner Moses Kipsilo, the 2010 Commonwealth double gold medalist, to take up the sport that has helped him become a better person.
I heard about Moses Kipsilo winning the double gold at the Commonwealth. So that is the time, it was the lunch time. I ran 5 kilometers and then come back 5 kilometers. So that is the time I tried at least to pick that interest.
Among says he started competing with normal people and says it has actually shaped him to become a better runner.
That's the time that I started training very hard. And then in 2010, I happened to go to Kenya. That was the Great Lakes. And the Paralympics. So I ran 5,000, I was number 4. I ran 1,500, I was number 4. I ran 200, I was number 3. So that one qualified me for 2011 All Africa Game, which took place in Mabutu. And then from there, I ran in Mabutu, I ran 5,000, I was number 3. I came back with bronze, and then 1,500, I was number 4.
The 31-year-old first competed at the 2012 London Paralympics Games, where he didn't win a medal. But he says that didn't deter him to working harder and believed he would eventually succeed. His success came in the subsequent years, with the very first Paralympics medal coming at the Rio de Janeiro 2016 Games, and has gone on to win many medals, including gold at World Championships.
First of all, I feel very happy because of that silver. And then I feel very happy because that was the Paralympic. And then 2017, it was the World Championship for Paralympic. It is called World Para-Athlete Championship. It is like the normal people where they go for World Championship. Mm-hmm. So I feel very happy for being the first Ugandan since 1972 when Uganda Paralympic Committee started. I feel very happy. Also, to be the first in the kind of the Paralympic also to win a silver, gold, and then this one, bronze. Mm. I feel happy.
Sports reporter and analyst Dakaba Chigongo says he was amazed watching a determined Among race for bronze at the Tokyo Games.
Some of the things that happened, I think, were beyond his control. He got a kick on the knee in that final. That left him with a bruise on his right knee, and that did not help his cause. He's in a race, the men's T1500-meter race, that is very fast, and he does not possess the best start. So Yoris banks on his kicking at the end, and that let him down quite a bit tactically in the race in that final.
Dakaba says Among should be proud of his exploits, for it inspires hundreds of thousands of many other people living with disabilities in Uganda and the world at large.
I think it gives renewed hope to so many of the people with disabilities who are in sports. and remind them about what they can do beyond feeling sorry for themselves for things that nature has brought upon them. A medal like his reminds so many people that if they choose to do sport or do something in their lives, they can actually achieve.
Dr. Naboth Kool, a lecturer of political science and rights activist, agrees. Kool, who is a person living with disabilities, says a monk is an inspiration to the world.
It is a fraternity that has always been categorized under the Pharisees' stereotypes and misconceptions within their abilities, that they can't do anything. So winning a gold or a medal or a bronze, it is a precursor to indicate that particularly what they thought about is not actually what is. People will start looking at us from the positive perspective.
A monk is well aware of the impact his running has had on the society.
Right now, as I talk now, the disabled people in Uganda, young men and women, they are very proud of me. And they are coming on board every day. And as a role model, first of all, I must thank God because it was not me, you know, who can make it without God. It was God who gave me all those energy and that talent. And that is the reason why I'm still moving on and on because of God.
Among says he plans to become a Paralympics coach when he eventually retires. But as of now, he says he has to concentrate on track and keep the Uganda flag high.
2022 is not very far. It is just at the corner because this is 2021. Yeah, there's Commonwealth next year. There's World Championship next year. 2020 is really there's the All Africa game. 2024, there's the Paralympic Paris. So all those one I'm still focusing on, I'm also trying also to see that the age is also coming so that it will push me from the field back to the road where my brother, Stephen, brought for us the gold medal in 2017, that is the marathon.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji, Kampala, Uganda.
Thanks, Mugume. Here in the United States, a big weekend is coming up in marathoning, and African runners are once again expected to challenge for titles. The Chicago Marathon will be run on Sunday, and the following day, Monday, October 11th, will be the Boston Marathon. Boston is the world's oldest annual marathon. It's been held annually since 1897, except for 2020, when it was canceled due to the coronavirus pandemic. Now, the race is usually held in April, but because of the pandemic, organizers pushed it back to October this year. The energetic Andy Edwards had a chance to talk with Boston Marathon race director Dave McGillivray about the course. Here's Andy.
Being in Boston 32 years ago, I was so struck about how distinctive the history, the course of Boston is. You know, a tough, tough course and that descent, which means that as it is, you'll never have officially a world record. But people like Rob Di Castella, the 1987 world champion in the marathon from Australia, saying something like, a quote, his legs felt so battered coming down off the Newton Hills. So if we just pick out a couple of aspects of the Boston course.
Yeah, I've always felt that every marathon has its own what I call character. And for us, you know, we're the oldest continuous running marathon in the world. And it was basically created on the heels of BAA members going to Athens and running in the Athens Marathon Olympic Games back in 1896 or whatever it was. And so it's a point-to-point. And held on a Monday versus a weekend day, very unique, very different. It started at noontime, mainly because the only way to get out to the start in Hopkinton is to take the train, and the train only arrived there at like 11 o'clock, so you couldn't start it any earlier, and all kinds of unique features. Certainly the downhill is the sort of part of the course that is the most challenging, believe it or not, because it people usually aren't that prepared to run that much downhill, 400 feet in elevation drop. So they get, as Rob said, you know, beat up along the way. So from the beginning to the Newton Hills, it's a lot of downhill. So by the time you get to the Newton Hills, you know, you're fried. And so, you know, the people who run this course the best are people who know the course. So it isn't just the shape you're in that day. It's two things: knowing the course, so the strategy of how to run, but also training on a course that has topography similar to Boston to prepare and acclimate your body to such, you know, extreme downhill. But yeah, it's the only major metropolitan marathon that actually runs through more residential community than it does city streets. It's called the Boston Marathon, but only 2.6 miles of the Boston Marathon is in Boston. So, you know, you start off in Hopkinton and go through, you know, Ashland and Natick, Framingham and Natick, and finally you come to the halfway point in Wellesley with the Wellesley College women out there with signs and yelling and screaming and the tunnel and all that, and then, you know, you make your way to, you know, Newton and then the infamous hills, you know, going up to Heartbreak Hill and cresting that and Boston College and come down off those hills and turn onto Beacon Street and finally making your way past Fenway Park and the Citgo sign and, you know, right on Hereford, left on Boylston and crossing the finish line right there in front of the John Hancock Tower. So there's a lot of unique aspects of the course that people, as they're running, they go, okay, I made it this far. Okay, I went by Wellesley College and the women. Okay, I made it to this. And then they check it off along the way. And so it's just a really unique experience that makes this the holy grail of marathoning throughout the world.
That's a lovely way to put it, the Holy Grail. And I think history, you know, if you're a sports fan and a participant, it can mean so much. I mean, I think when I started running, you know, 40 odd years ago and more, reading about Bill Rogers, Boston Billy, I mean, you picked up that point of people who know the course. From what I remember, again, his autobiography is on my shelves. He was living in Boston. And when he won the race in, 1975, he had that kind of hand stenciled, like a felt tip marker pen on a T-shirt, Greater Boston Track Club. And he'd been training on that daily. And then you also earlier, don't you, you had Clarence DeMar in the 1930s winning Boston seven times. And that's what makes these events special, isn't it? The fast times, wonderful champions, but also a sense of history.
Without a doubt. And for those of us living around here in the early years, you know, there were a lot of local champions like Johnny Kelly Sr., Johnny Kelly the Younger, Billy Rogers, Joan Benoit Samuelson, Alberto Salazar, you know, Greg Meyer. A lot of these folks grew up in this area, and it was really fun to watch the Boston Marathon with all these international runners, but the local homegrown hero ends up winning. And it's just such a thrill to witness that, and Billy to win it four times and Joni a couple of times and all that. So yeah, just that history is really what draws people to Boston every year.
That's Dave McGillivray, the race director of the Boston Marathon, which will be held on Monday, October 11th. And Dave was talking with the energetic Andy Edwards from Boston, Massachusetts. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
The James Webb Space Telescope, scheduled for launch this December, is equipped with a much larger mirror than the Hubble and is said to be 100 times more powerful. This is Rick Pantaleo. Please join me for a preview of this new space observatory on the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. My guest will be Eric Smith, program scientist for the James Webb Space Telescope program at NASA. Be sure to listen Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Thanks, Rick. Skateboarding has moved from the streets to big competitions, including this year's Tokyo Olympics in Japan. It's also shifted from being a male-dominated sport to one that girls are enjoying, too. VOA's Veena Mubtadi reports.
After more than a year of staying home because of the pandemic, 11-year-old Angela Justice wanted to try something new. She chose to learn to ride a skateboard, a choice that took her mother by surprise.
And I was shocked when she said that. I was like, what? Okay. And then we started seeing like other little girls, like this little girl in the park skating. And I was like, oh, look, she's doing it.
I like being in person. I also like doing new tricks.
She is one of a dozen students who learned skateboarding from Goats on Wheels, a group in Montgomery County, Maryland.
I seem to have more inquiries from girls. Girls are just breaking through the barriers these days, especially on the Olympics. You see the smallest girls getting the biggest prizes and, you know, winning the golds and stuff like that.
The shift is being welcomed by professional skateboarders, including Indonesian national athlete Nyimas Bunga Cinta.
I'm really happy to go skateboarding with other girls. Sometimes when we practice, we like to keep up with each other's skills.
The 15-year-old recalls the situation was very different when she first took on the sport in 2014.
Masih didominasiin sama cowok sih, karena
it was still dominated by boys because all the girls were older, 18 years old or more. I was the only younger girl.
As a hijab-wearing girl who rides skateboards in a conservative country, Cinta has destroyed many stereotypes, something that her father supports.
Skater harus begitu gitu kan.
That's what skaters do. The hashtag is skate and destroy. Everything that a skateboard runs over will be destroyed, including mindsets. Stereotypes like women should stay in the kitchen, must listen to men, and should not be dominant are broken by skateboarders.
Today, Cinta has gained a series of national and international medals. She was the youngest medalist at the Indonesia-hosted Asian Games in 2018, and she competed in the U.S. qualifying event for the Tokyo Olympics.
Dari akunya sendiri kayak
I haven't reached the goal I want. I want to be an Olympian.
Three, okay.
She also wants to see more girls skateboarding on the streets. Veena Mubtadi, VOA News, Silver Spring, Maryland.
All the way out, all the way.
Thanks, Veena. An update now on the Major League Baseball playoffs. The reigning World Series champion Los Angeles Dodgers advanced Wednesday night by winning the National League's wild card game on a wild and thrilling walk-off-the-field victory thanks to a home run by Chris Taylor. The AP's Dave Ferry reports.
Chris Taylor has put the Dodgers into the NL Division Series, slamming a two-out, two-run homer off Alex Reyes in the bottom of the ninth to complete a 3-1 triumph over the Cardinals.
These are the type of moments that you dream about and you live for, and I'll be able to look back on this for the rest of my life, and I'm just fortunate that I was able to come through in that spot.
A wild pitch by Max Scherzer scored Tommy Edman and gave the Cardinals the lead in the first inning. It remained 1-0 until Justin Turner unloaded a home run off Adam Wainwright in the bottom of the fourth. The Dodgers will take on the Giants in the division series, a matchup of teams that have won 107 games apiece since opening day. I'm Dave Ferry.
Thanks, Dave. Dodgers manager Dave Roberts also praised the performance of one of his outfielders, Cody Bellinger, in the wild card game.
The at-bats that he took tonight, take the walk, base hit, a couple stolen bases, and kind of that's what, you know, we need from him to be that dynamic player, not that one-dimensional home run hitter. And so he's embraced that, and he helped us win a ball game tonight.
Wraps up the October 7th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.